Welcome to Feldman
Talk Radio.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, happy Sunday and good evening, everybody. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review. Thanking you for tuning in and appreciate it. And it's August the 2nd, 2020. And I guess we're in our 65th day of violent rioting and Marxist-Islamist coalition protesting. And it just seems to keep going on. And the Democrats don't change their mind. Not many people have anything to say about it. But, you know, while all this stuff is going on, there's some things that are very good that are going on. It doesn't seem like they just don't capture the imagination of our wonderful mainstream media too much. I'm sure they reported on it a little bit here and there. But, you know, SpaceX capsule went up. They went to the International Space Station. And they landed in the Gulf today. And I have a picture. I saw a picture where the craft came down, and there were boats there. Boats actually came out to greet the SpaceX capsule right after the splashdown. One of them had a Trump flag. I mean, these are days we should be celebrating. I mean, if who could have imagined an attack on our life like COVID-19 has been. And, you couple that with all the rioting, it's been pretty negative. But really rolling into 2020, we were rolling in. And there was a lot of whining and screaming and protesting and, you know, the usual, you know, progressive Marxist nonsense going on, you know, especially in election year. But, we still went to the space station, came back down. There were people that were following it. And the New York Post reported that the recreational boaters got up close and personal to SpaceX capsule carrying two U.S. astronauts as it landed in the Gulf of Mexico Sunday, catching NASA officials off guard. That's not what we were anticipating. But we do that, right, deplorables, right, patriots? We do that. We come when we're not when they're not anticipating us coming, and just like I keep saying, we haven't even begun to fight yet. You know, we got these people out there burning, looting, going crazy. We haven't started the fight yet, have we? We the people, we haven't stood up yet. And it's not a threat; it's just a statement. But it's a wonderful thing that Trump has got. You know, I remember when Obama just shut NASA down. And, instead of NASA was, they were teaching all kinds of progressive, it was like Common Core got put into NASA, and they were just like, they were using them to teach progressive philosophy. And it was pretty much of a sad day, but Trump has fought so hard to keep the promises that he made all of us when he was running for president. He's done a damn good job getting a lot of them done, and that's with next to no support at all from the Democrats, obviously. And, very little. I mean, I'm not even going to say support, just fairness in the mainstream media. They don't even report fairly what's going on, what has gone on. They keep pushing their narratives like they always do. But I think Donald Trump's done a lot. And Elon Musk, I mean, talk about a great capitalist success story. It's been a great thing, and it didn't have to be a government agency, did it? I mean, it seems to be doing it privately, obviously with federal funding and oversight. But it seems very good. The legacy of NASA will live on. Whether it's SpaceX or Elon Musk or whoever, but America, we This is where we get our innovations from. You know, the original NASA program, so many inventions, treatments for food, all kinds of things came out of the NASA program. You know, just besides, you know, heat shields and retro rockets. But they landed. It was great. It was obviously a great mission. Apparently, everybody's safe and sound. And that's a great thing, because I'm sure the left was out there, you know, cheering for a disaster, cheering for something to go wrong. And they must have been really pissed off it didn't. Probably why they didn't give it a lot of news. But I think, you know, two guys going into space, going to the International Space Station, I think it's pretty amazing. They went up, they came down, they're back, and they're doing very well. They're doing very well. But it was a sad day 4 days ago. And I just wanted to talk about Herman Cain for a minute. Herman Cain was an incredible American success story, an incredible success story. Not a little success story, but an incredible success story. And he was very involved in so many different things. You know, he has a very impressive track record. I mean, he had a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics from Morehouse College. He got a Master of Science in Computer Science from Purdue University. And he was doing that at the same time he was working full-time as a ballistics analyst for the U.S. Department of Navy while he was a civilian. And, he was born December 13th, 1945, and he died July 30th, 2020. And, you know, I wanted to give a few minutes to Herman Cain right now, you know, because, I mean, George Floyd got three funerals and unending coverage. And you'd think the guy was a saint, okay? And there's many other people that they march around. You know, Lewis just passed away. Great civil rights fighter. I mean, those guys had guts, you know? They had guts. You know, Martin Luther King, Ted Abernathy. So many others. And these guys Again, you would think they were all saints. It was wall to wall. You know, all the way up to the point where Obama is giving a eulogy, which was really a political rally for the progressive socialists, which I thought was disgusting. It was repugnant to use that format. They should have spoke of his life, about his family, and I'm sure they went through that. But Obama came out, the disingenuous, lying scumbag that he is. He comes out. And he's talking about Bull Connor and George Wallace. They were Democrats, folks. You know, they seem to forget. They always seem to forget that the Klan, the hangings, the burnings, the social isolation, the voter suppression, the violence at the voter polls, those are Democrats doing all that. Democrats. Segregationists like Joe Biden. Like Al Gore's father, like FDR, like LBJ, like Woodrow Wilson. Racists, segregationists, Democrats. The words fit together because they've been together a long time in history. And they seem to always forget it. But that's one of the great things about Herman Cain. You know, Herman Cain had that American spirit, that individual strength to and drive to attain what he wanted to attain, not to be defined by others. He was going to define who he was going to be, and that was that. You know, he didn't need marching in the streets and you know, things that really don't help people. You know this little Marxist revolution we got going on here in the country right now is not going to help anyone. It's going to hurt everybody. But he was an American business executive, a writer, and a Tea Party activist. Cain grew up in Georgia and graduated from Morehouse College with a bachelor's degree in mathematics. He then earned a master's degree in computer science at Purdue while also working full-time for the U.S. Department of Navy. In 1977, he joined the Pillsbury Company, where he later became a vice president. Now, during the 1980s, Cain's success as a business exec at Burger King... They promoted they prompted Pillsbury to appoint him as chairman and CEO of Godfather's Pizza, in which capacity he served from 86 to 96. That's 1986 to 1996. Kane was chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, Omaha branch from 1989 to 91. He was a deputy chairman from 92 to 94 and then chairman until 96 of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. In 1995, he was appointed to the Kemp Commission. And in 96, he served as a senior economic advisor to Bob Dole's presidential campaign. And I voted for Bob Dole that year, and I voted against NAFTA, like everybody else should have. Because, you know, that put us on the road to ruin in terms of our manufacturing. And we paid a price, you know, when China decided to hold back PPEs and other products that we needed. And we didn't have the manufacturing. That's turning now. Another great thing that Trump has done. Gotten the private sector to update things. And now I understand that Kodak is going to make ingredients. Drug ingredients. It's great. America can be incredible if given the chance. You know, and he served as president and CEO of National Restaurant Association. In May 2011, Kane announced his 2012 presidential candidacy, and by the fall, I'm sure you guys remember the 999 tax plan and debating performances had made him a serious contender for the Republican nomination. In November, however, his campaign faced allegations of sexual misconduct, all denied by Kane. Okay, but he announced suspension of his campaign. You know, there was more than that. You know, this particular, you know, Wikipedia information is leaving out the fact that his family was getting threatened, his wife was getting terrible emails and threatening phone calls. You know, and as usual, you know, the sexual misconducts come out of the woodwork, right? You know who's playing that game? Because this man was a threat. I would have loved to see him go up against Obama instead of Mitt Shit Romney. Because, you know, Mitt just folded up like a cheap suit. He did really well in the first debate because he was trying. And then I guess it was too easy and he had to let Obama win or something. I don't know. Maybe that's where the trade-off is now. Why he's marching with BLM. Okay? Why he's voting with progressive socialist Democrats, while he's standing with them and against our president and against the American people. But let's face it, the Republican Party has been a real disappointment, but not Herman Cain. Herman Cain's going to be missed. But one thing I didn't know was that he is the co-chairman. He was the co-chairman of Black Voices for Trump. And we've seen them out. We've seen them out at rallies. We've seen them on the internet. We've seen them. And, you know, it's a shame he died of complications of COVID-19, ironically enough, while he was co-chairman of the Black Voices for Trump. But he's going to be missed. He's going to be missed big time. And he's a great success story. You know, you would think, you know, it was like the way they used to treat Condoleezza Rice. Brilliant woman. I don't agree with all her policies and things she did under George W. That not everything, but she was a brilliant woman. And there were more websites on the internet slamming her, you know, insulting her, attacking her, than there was any positive information from the press, because here was somebody else that had come from real humble beginnings. I mean, Herman Cain's parents were a housekeeper and a his father was a driver for the president of Coca-Cola, chauffeur. But, you know, Herman Cain's going to be missed, and he deserves a lot more time. He deserved a lot more reflection by the media, and they didn't give it to him, so I wanted to give him a few minutes here. So I hope you don't mind. I will be taking calls, you know, right after the midpoint break, as usual, 515-605-9344. That's 515-605-3944. If you want to call in, be part of the show, it'd be great. I'd love to hear your opinion. I get tired of bouncing things around in my head. But I want to talk today about censorship. Because I just went through an incident with my Facebook account. I mean, I've been suspended from both Twitter and Facebook numerous times over the years. I didn't meet their community standards, which I don't understand because I don't do a lot of commenting when I post. I post stories I find interesting or appropriate. And I post a lot. Anybody, you guys that know me, know I put a lot of posts up. And, you know, 4 days ago, my Facebook account was put on what they call a restriction. And that meant that I couldn't do anything. I couldn't like somebody else's post. I couldn't post anything. I couldn't write anything. I couldn't really do anything. I could look at the page as it went by. And fortunately, Feldman World Group on Facebook, if you're not on it now, please stop by, join the group. I got a great crew. It's, you know, facebook.com, you know, / Feldman World Group. And they keep posting. You know, I love you guys. You just keep posting. If I'm not there, if I'm sick, if I miss something, if I'm away for a while, you guys keep it going because the message is so important that we keep talking about these things. But I got put on a restriction, and I know, you know, I'm not the only one. I mean, and that's the frightening thing about it is that, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Google. And you know, others, you know, Instagram, you know, because they're all in bed together, all these companies, all these app companies. You know, they take me down. For all I did was repost. I didn't even comment. I usually don't write a lot of comments. Sometimes I do when I'm angry. But, you know, I didn't comment, you know. I didn't use any foul language. I wasn't making any terroristic threats. I wasn't attacking anybody. It was nothing. I reposted an article about a cure and a treatment for COVID-19, which happened to include hydrochloroquine. And, you know, first they sent me a warning during that day, and then later on they just shut me down. They put me on this restriction. In fact, my page, when you go to my Facebook page, any of you guys have been on these restrictions, you know, I still have this little thing there that I have a warning. You know, that if I better watch my step. Facebook told me I better watch my step or I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. But this kind of censorship is un-American. It's totally un-American with regards to, and I don't care about this crap about, well, they're a private business. Well, they should be stripped of their protections that they have from liability and all these other things. They should be stripped. If they are going to start to censor, then that turns them into a magazine. That turns them into a publication. And they should be treated like any other publication. And they shouldn't get any special deals at all anymore anyway. Because they've been abusing it for quite a long time. Quite a long time. You know, when Lois Lerner, you know, back in 2010, 2011, was tying up the money of these, you know, these the money in the tax setup for many organizations, you know, including Tea Party, including, God, I'm going to miss Herman Cain, Tea Party and Zionists. If you were pro-Israel, they were shutting you down. And the media didn't talk about it. There was just, you know, just us crazy conspiracy theorists out here just babbling away, complaining, worrying, concerned. But the fact of the matter is these people wield a lot of power. And they've built this power up a lot over the 10 years or however many years these social media sites have been open. They've been collecting data. We allowed them to collect data, to know everything about our lives, to track us, where we go, what we're doing, what we're buying. They're claiming it's all, you know, so they can have, tailored advertising, you know, based on where you go and who you know and what you buy. But they've got all that, you know. It's, we agreed to be tracked by Big Brother. We all did, you know, and... But it was, you know, it was different in the beginning. But, you know, the people that they're getting rid of, like myself, you know, I wasn't threatening everybody. I wasn't being a racist. I wasn't saying I was going to blow up your country. Okay, but the anti-Semitic sites and the anti-Israel sites and the anti-America sites just to get to go on and on and on. They can say anything. They can say, they can just post burning flags all day and just talk about how they're going to destroy America and they're going to kill white people and they're going to blow up America and they're going to tear down, you know. That's okay. That's protected free speech. But all I was doing was sharing it, what I consider to be an interesting and pertinent article about different treatments and that we don't have to be panicking all the time about coronavirus. But this suppressing of the medical debate, this is dangerous. You know, and it's not just Facebook and Twitter. It's, you know, the mainstream media is complicit in all of this. They you know, it's like omission. They just leave things out. They don't tell the whole story. They don't give you all the information. And this type of censorship and denial of free speech is un-American, completely un-American. And I don't know how it can stand. But this suppressing medical debate, it's so dangerous. You know? And Alan Bukhari on Breitbart, he noted that Twitter has once again acted as judge, jury, and executioner. For 4 days, Twitter prevented the Breitbart News Twitter account from posting, only restoring its permissions earlier today. And this was in no small part because Twitter dragged its feet on Breitbart News appeal. Now, I've got to tell you, I post a lot of things from Breitbart, but they could just decide that if I'm posting something from Gateway Pundit, from Washington Examiner, from Jihad Watch, Spencer's page, they can just shut me down because I'm pushing this, you know, this illegal thing. But Twitter initially locked Breitbart News account because it posted a video of a press conference featuring Ralph Norman, Republican South Carolina, and licensed doctors sharing their views and opinions on coronavirus and the medical response to the pandemic. The event was held, and I reposted all of those clips that I could find of those doctors. And there are other opinions. You know, Dr. Samadi, who you probably see in Newsmax and around, you know, he's a friend of mine. He got shut down. The post got shut down. You know, I was restricted. I don't know. I guess they have to do that to you if you're a threat, if you're actually saying something that is a threat. But, you know, it's just, you know, now this, you know, the event, the doctor's event, was talking about hydrochloroquine. Now, who are these people? And you know, this COVID controversy, you know, it's getting worse and worse every day because, you know, to mask or not to mask, you know, that is the question. You know, is it going to come back? Is it going to kill people? You know, the death rates are going down. You know, there was a spike. There's a lot more testing. They're finding people with it. But we're finding out, you know, that some of these numbers aren't all right. But, you know, if they can shut down this conversation about hydrochloroquine, you know, if there was a Holocaust going on in Minnesota, you know, they could shut that down too. They could deny it. Look what they've done with this Marxist Islamist revolutionary coalition rioting going on all over the country. They're not showing it. You know, we're seeing it online. Fortunately, a lot of the sites that I follow, they get a lot of video. So we see, and then there's individuals that go out and get their own video and post it on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram so we can all see it. And then we see the truth. We see what's going on, but not in the mainstream media. They're doing the same thing. They're, you know, it's the art of omission. They're just leaving things out. If it might step on their narrative or balk their narrative. So, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. And it's totally outrageous. And it's un-American. And it just shouldn't be happening. You know. And Bukhari finished up by saying that Twitter's actions have public health implications. The tech giant is preventing the public, including the critically ill, from receiving information from physicians with firsthand experience treating COVID-19 patients. Twitter's censorship denies the public's access to information, and that could put lives, health, and well-being at risk. Now, they said the reason why they restricted me was that the post that I had put up there could do harm to people. I mean, it's unbelievable. It was unbelievable that, you know, that was Facebook, and then Twitter's just as bad. And then I find out, and I probably missed it, but apparently Dr. Fauci, you know, Mr. Mask, or now he's going to be called The Mask, you know, he's been bouncing around. I don't trust that guy at all. But it turns out his daughter is a software engineer for Twitter. You know, this is really incestuous, isn't it? The progressive socialist Democrats and their deep state and their plants in the media and in Hollywood and their plants in the judiciary and in the Senate and House and in our colleges and in our schools. They're a tight network, but they're very incestuous. It's amazing how they're all helping each other out. But Allison Fauci is a software engineer there. You think that has anything to do with it? Do you think that she sits there and looks for posts like the one I reposted? If it goes against her father's opinion, they knock it right out? You know, I don't know. You know, you do start getting paranoid. It does start to sound conspiratorial. But it is conspiratorial. There's election interference going on. Trump can't get hit. You know, Biden's paying for ads. Every time I turn around, there's a Biden ad. There's a Biden ad on Google. There's a Biden ad on Twitter. There's a Biden ad on TV. You know, and you got to hunt for Trump's ads. Some of the places won't even run them, or they're running them at some ridiculous time. Or, you know, it's insane. There's election interference going on. And Twitter's not just censoring doctors or public health experts, but they're censoring GOP chairwoman. Republican State Party's chair account. And her state happens to be having the primary on the 4th, in 2 days. I mean, you know, it's getting blatantly obvious. But Dr. Kelly Ward wrote a piece for the Spectator, and she was one of the people that was shut down. So I just want to read her response. It's fairly short. Twitter informed me that my account was suspended for sharing content they disagreed with. And while I suppose I should be flattered by joining such august company as Donald Trump Jr., the issue is bigger than me. It is a question of censorship. And that's what I'm here talking about today, folks, is the censorship. Now, the reason I was given by Twitter for why my account was suspended was because, according to them, I spread false information about COVID-19, or rather, information that goes against the accepted science. I don't know how they can call it that. It is possible for the geniuses at Twitter are referencing the medical journal Lancet, which published a study claiming hydrochloroquine was not effective in fighting the coronavirus, and that this drug, which had been used for decades with great success to treat malaria, may cause cardiac problems. Because if so, the study was later retracted after it was discovered that the underlying data the company used was totally false. Let's not forget how, at the outset of the coronavirus pandemic, a French physician recommended this course of treatment. The truth is, once it was mentioned by President Trump as a promising option, the entire discussion became politicized by the media. Now you can get censored for simply tweeting a video of doctors who say they are seeing good results treating COVID-19 patients with hydrochloroquine, azithromycin and zinc. It's profoundly disturbing, but Twitter hasn't just suspended me as an individual. They suspended the duly elected chairman of the Republican Party of Arizona. No other state party chair, Republican or Democrat, has been suspended in this way by Twitter. Arizona is a battleground state, and this cycle for both the presidential election and for the U.S. Senate. Twitter took this capricious action a week before the state's primary election and less than 100 days before the November general election. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic and the public policy surrounding the virus may be the biggest issue facing us today. to restrict the ability of a political official to weigh in on an issue of this magnitude is completely wrong. You know, and this woman happened to be, she's a residency-trained family physician. Excuse me. She has over 20 years of experience in the medical field. She knows what she's talking about. But the big tech social media companies, you know, they thrive because they've been allowed to function as communication platforms rather than publishers. And there's a huge distinction. And they've really got to be looked at again as publishers so they don't get protected. They don't get these liability detections. And one of the doctors, Stella Emanuel, she was one of the doctors there at the white coat doctors, that rally that they had, the white coat summit, excuse me. She's from Houston. She got a lot of guts, and she joined several of the other line doctors at that meeting, was on that video to talk about hydrochloroquine. And, you know, she said that she has personally treated over 350 patients suffering from COVID-19. And they all recovered. But see, that doesn't matter to the mainstream media. That doesn't matter to the tech giants. That doesn't matter. Because this is all about getting rid of Trump and implementing this progressive socialism. And they're, you know, they said that by any means necessary, they weren't kidding. Because they're doing everything they can. But this Dr. Stella, she wouldn't back down. She said, quote, yes, it eradicates the symptoms. It eradicates the virus. Of course they think I'm dangerous because I'm speaking truth. Asked Dr. Anthony Fauci, quote, when was the last time you saw a patient? And she said she's not going to stop. And I'm sure you guys saw the video because I thought she was so emotional about it. Because she's dealing with this day to day to day. She's seeing patients coming in, patients going out, people getting sick, people dying. You know, but we all know that this whole thing is being blown out of proportion. It's just blown out of proportion. Joe Hoft, a Gateway, reported that COVID-19 mortality reporting is masterfully misrepresented. The method of reporting makes current mortality appear much worse than it is. Okay? And he said he was reporting on the fraudulent reporting related to the China coronavirus in the past. One, deaths unrelated to the coronavirus, like motorcycle accidents and gunshot wounds, are being reported as COVID-19-related deaths. Two, deaths where the China coronavirus is assumed to be related are counted as COVID-19 deaths, even though no formal evidence is obtained. Number three, related to the above, only around 1% of all coronavirus deaths have no additional comorbidity. Only 1% of the deaths do not have an additional comorbidity. That means that nearly all the COVID deaths had other symptoms along with the coronavirus. But when reporting on mortality of COVID-19, this is the most part that's ignored. Number four, they've noted that COVID-19 overall mirrors the mortality rates of a bad flu season. Based on the current data, the monthly mortality rates from the China coronavirus are within expectations of an average flu season, with the exception of New York and New Jersey. Because Cuomo and Murphy, they sure did their job, didn't they? They sure did their job. They really took care of those nursing homes, right? They really did. They took care of the nursing homes. They're blaming everybody else. They're blaming Trump. They're blaming, you know, whatever they want to blame. They should have had these supplies. They should have known where and how many ventilators they had. They should have had enough gloves, enough jackets, enough masks, enough screens, face screens. Anyway, you know, we all run lean inventory now. You know, nobody wants to sit on a ton of inventory, you know, because of the way we look at financing, business financing now in these stupid models. But that's no excuse. And of course, the CDC director comes out and he admits that the COVID-19 death count is inflated. Now, the mainstream media didn't barely even report it. I don't think they reported on it at all. Okay? But the NOQ report did. Livingston did. And it's like the deafening silence of this mainstream media is the sound of a populace left in the dark. about COVID-19. Conspiracy theories about inflated death counts have been proven time and again. But mum's still the word as far as CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, Post, Washington Post, and even Fox News. And they're going down the drain, right, folks? I mean, we've depended on Fox for so long, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. You know, it should have been a blockbuster story. The director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, Robert Redfield, acknowledged more than the likelihood that coronavirus death counts are being exaggerated by hospitals for higher compensation. He even declared this has been happening for a while. And you'll notice it's happening all during the time Mr. Fauci's been at the NIH. Because the AIDS crisis, when hospitals would count pretty much any death as someone HIV positive as an AIDS death because they would receive more money from the government. Now, according to the Blaze, they said that during a hearing by the House Oversight Reform Select Committee on the coronavirus on Friday, Representative Blaine Lukemeyer, Republican of Missouri, asked whether hospitals have a perverse incentive to inflate COVID-19 fatality numbers. Now, shockingly enough, Redfield admitted that they do. He said, quote, "I think you are correct that we've seen this in other disease processes too," Redfield said. Quote, "Really, in the HIV epidemic, somebody may have had a heart attack, but was also HIV. The hospital would prefer the classification for HIV because there's greater reimbursement," he explained. So I do think there's some reality to that. When it comes to the death reporting, though, ultimately, it's how the physician defines it on the death certificate, and we review all those death certificates. So I think probably it is less operable in the cause of death, although I won't say that there are not some cases, he continued. I do think, though, that when it comes to hospital reimbursement issues or individuals that get discharged, there could be some play in that for sure. Debate has raged over whether the coronavirus deaths are being counted accurately, and various studies have found conflicting conclusions. And even Fox buried the damn story. They opted for a different and arguably less relevant lead for their story on Redfield's testimony. They focused on his statements regarding suicides. And this is important as well because, you know, this lockdown has destroyed a lot of lives and continues to destroy lives and will continue to destroy lives as long as we're in this situation with these draconian laws and the fear-mongering. You know, we're Americans. You know, we've stood up through whatever. I mean, think about the people that stay for a massive hurricane and don't leave. They want to stay in their house. People have to make choices. The government shouldn't be making these choices for us ever. Because you cover that kind of draconian control with censorship, and that leads you to what we've got now with all this Marxist revolution going on. Anybody wants to call in, become part of the show? 515-605-9344. You get at least a 2 full minutes, if not more, to say anything you want. And it'd be great if you did call in. I'd like to hear what people are thinking. But, you know, it's just incredible, the censorship, the draconian laws, and now we're being overrun by this what I call the Marxist Islamist Revolutionary Coalition. And they're all over the place. They're worldwide, and they're riding all over the world. And they're all part of the cancel culture. The cancel culture is one of their, it's part of this whole movement. And we all know that Barry Weiss, you know, left the New York Times. But she actually went on with Bill Maher, and she condemns the cancel culture as social murder. And this was reported in The Federalist by Jordan Davidson, the former New York Times opinion editor. Barry Weiss appeared on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher Friday night, criticizing cancel culture and calling it a social murder. And I want to read you this quote from her. She said, "It's not just about punishing the sinner. It's not just about punishing the person for being insufficiently pure. It's about this sort of secondary boycott of people who would deign to speak to that person or appear on a platform with that person," she said. "And we see just very obviously where that kind of politics gets us. If conversation with people that we disagree with becomes impossible, what is the way that we solve conflict? It's with violence. She said the way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion. And I've said that for years. The Klan, the Nation of Islam, Antifa, all these, the VLM, they should have to get, they should have a cable station like C-SPAN, you know, and they should have to get up there and defend their platforms every single day instead of hiding under a mystique or being able to sling around slogans and propaganda and you know, Photoshop pictures to defend their actions and their attitude. But Barry said that we refuse any false choice between justice and freedom, which cannot exist without each other. As writers, we need a culture that leaves us room for experimentation, risk-taking, and even mistakes. We need to preserve the possibility of good faith disagreement without dire professional consequences. What we are trying to say with the letter is that Thomas did it, forming it, was saying what's happening now is that growing culture of illiberalism is different from criticism. So, you know, it's very, you know, this isn't working, you know. It's just, it's not working. It's un-American. It doesn't really, you know, it just can't continue. This cancel culture, it's amazing. You know, they find a picture of you as somebody from 30 years ago, and all of a sudden your job, your family, everything is destroyed. Everything is destroyed. I mean, it's not as bad maybe of kind of how they destroyed or tried to destroy General Flynn, but Roger Stone and the way they attack Trump and lie about Trump every day. But this is really bad. If they can censor us on the social media, okay, if they can just absolutely defy us completely, defy us as viable people just because we disagree, okay, with the progressive socialist Democrat narrative, you know what that's going to lead to? That leads to totalitarianism, which is exactly what the Democrats want. And I'll say it again. The state, I moved to Florida 7-8 months ago. In New Jersey, where I lived in Essex County, when I would go out to vote for the local elections, you know, there'd be the national elections and the Senate elections and so forth, but on the local elections, there's only one party, or there's two people from the same party, or there's two people running for city council from the same party, but their sub-party has a different name, you know? You know, it's really pretty bad. But, you know, now we have, just want to remind everybody, 515-605-9344, anybody wants to call in. You can correct me, you can teach me, you could ask me, you could show me, but call in if you feel like it, it'd be fine. But, you know, now we've had the Marxists allowing Marxists to assault our cities and our citizens. And, you know, Black Lives Matter is not always what they seem. You know, in their name, which was, they must have planned on this, you know, Black Lives Matter. If you criticize Black Lives Matter, then you don't care about black lives, right? Millions of people have said that and noted that observation. You know, but, you know, Black Lives Matter said they're trained Marxists. Black Lives Matter was founded by people that are Muslim, that have anti-Israel and anti-Semitic opinions and tendencies. And they said, we will burn this, we will burn down this system. You know, and Sorian Kern at Gatestone put together a little list, and it said a recent study by the Pew Research Center found that more than 2/3 of Americans support Black Lives Matter movement. While Gatestone Institute and doubtless many others wish that blacks and all minorities benefit from the equal opportunities and protections offered under the United States Constitution, the high level of backing raised the question, how much does the public really know about Black Lives Matter? Or I call them only Black Lives Matter. Now, BLM's leaders openly admit that they want to abolish the nuclear family, the police departments nationwide, all prisons, and capitalism. Now, Black Lives Matter uses 1,000 Currents, which is an IRS-approved 501c3 organization, as its fiscal sponsor. Now, donations made on the Black Lives Matter website are processed by the left-wing Act Blue Charities, a donation platform affiliated with the Democrat Party, and then transferred to 1,000 Currents, which then distributes them back, or some of it, back to Black Lives Matter. And they also said, if this country doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down this system and replace it, all right? I just want black liberation and black sovereignty by any means necessary. That was Hawk Newsom in the New York Post on June 25th. Now, Black Lives Matter is also obsessed with U.S. President Donald J. Trump, who arguably has done more for African Americans than any other president in recent memory, maybe in history since Lincoln. I mean, you know, FDR, when FDR got elected, a lot of people don't know this, and I keep saying it over and over again, because FDR was a racist segregationist. Now, D.C. had already been desegregated by the previous Republican administration. When FDR became president, he resegregated D.C. You know, separate bathrooms, separate restaurants, separate cars, separate taxis. That was your hero, FDR, all your progressives that are monitoring the show. Now, in reality, this has nothing to do with black lives and everything to do with the liberal Marxist anarchists having, and I happen to add the Islamists as well, having hijacked, as they always do, an important social issue with which they will undermine the very communities and people they claim to represent. And that was a quote from Tammy Bruce. But, you know, BLM has lifted much of its agenda from the radical leftist groups active in the United States during the 60s and 70s. BLM is an ideological descendant of the Black Power Movement, the Black Panthers, the Black Liberation Army, and the Weather Underground, all of which sought to overthrow the U.S. political system. BLM's innovation is twofold. One, it has successfully employed intersectionality and identity politics to stir up a broad range of grievances that extend far beyond race, including class, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, immigration status, and other identity markers, thus assuring that BLM offers something for just about anyone claiming victim status. And two, it has successfully leveraged social media to agitate mob hysteria and funnel societal rage into a political movement with a large online reach. BLM's ideological influences and sources of funding, BLM is at the core of a vast network of Marxist groups whose demands often coincide with the Antifa anarchists, many of whom have been piggybacking on BLM protests to stir chaos and destruction. Left-to-center foundations, including the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, as well as intermediaries including 1,000 Currents, Borealis Philanthropy, Alliance for Global Justice, and have provided tens of millions of dollars to BLM and the Movement for Black Lives, an umbrella group that coordinates the BLM activism. BLM is a revolutionary anti-capitalist movement masquerading as a civil rights movement. Its focus is on racial issues as a smokescreen for much larger effort to completely dismantle the American economic, political, and social systems. We can't say that enough. They want to rebuild everything from scratch based on Karl Marx principles. Karl Marx principles. You know, it's incredible. And, you know, they were burning, in Portland yesterday, they were burning Bibles now. They're burning American flags. They were tearing down monuments. They were trying to build courthouses. Well, now they're burning Bibles, which really kind of, you know, really kind of clarifies where they are and where they're going to be. I got a caller on, area code 909. What's your name and what you got to say?
Hello, this is Daily News. I'm in your chat room.
Yeah, how are you? Yes, I saw that. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm well, thank you. And how are you? You sound all right.
I'm doing okay, as best as can be expected.
Yes, I hear you there. I don't know how old the article was showing the BLM support, but I know in other polls that have been taken that their support is going down finally. And that's a good thing. People are realizing that the BLM Inc. isn't the same thing as just BLM protesters and they got hijacked by BLM Inc., who is everything that you just read. And so people are
starting to see that
distinction, yeah, and that's good because it needs to be out in the open. You can't be fooling people anymore. And the Bevelin Beatty that we had covered street, yeah, in front of Trump Tower, yeah. She's a
one of my new heroes.
As well. Yes. Mine too.
She had guts. I couldn't believe she was out there screaming, slamming black paint over the yellow. It was great. That was just phenomenal.
Yeah. She goes from her and her best friend go state to state. They fund themselves. And, you know, things, anything that comes up that like that, like they were here in California last week to talk to, I guess, some of the homeless or whatever, just to try and see what the feel is here in California and change some minds and hearts as far as telling them who Black Lives Matter Inc. is and why they shouldn't be supported. So she's awesome. Shout out to her.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. She's tremendous. A really very strong, very gutsy, her whole group. You know, they were taking I heard though that when they the first went out two or three times in the New York area, and I heard that the first time when the police brought them back, they actually treated them very well at the precinct. So,
yeah, they did a video on that. They were really pleased and happy to report that. Getting to Herman Cain boy, you know, as I mentioned in the chat room, he's a poster child for systemic racism, being sarcastic, of course. For all his accomplishments, you know. And then Dr. Fauci, and, you know, I think that's why they wanted that Dr. Summit video to be suppressed by the social media sites, because I think they were afraid that it would get out about Dr. Fauci approving that very drug 15 years ago. And as
that's right, 2005, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, well, cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, the cat is out of the bag. Well, you know, the more, you know, and that's why it's that's why these restrictions on Facebook and the suspensions on Twitter and the censorship going on is such a threat. Because if the information is not getting out there, people aren't even going to know to the the extent of what things are. So at least there are people that are getting the information out, and like you said, I understand what you're saying about people are starting to wise up to BLM, but the corporate sponsors are still huge, and there's still tons of money going in there. So, you know, the line's getting drawn, and they obviously, the people that are supporting them obviously have a stake in this attempted cultural transition.
Absolutely. And when you think... the irony as far as the BLM group protesting, you know, big corporations and systemic racism in those agencies, and yet they're the ones that are pouring money into their group and they're the ones accepting it. So the BLM group.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. People are finding that
out. Well,
of course they would accept that. Thank goodness for your show and others like it. So thank you for your work.
Yeah, I just, you know, this is like my personal therapy, but thank you for that. It's hard to watch what's going on right now for myself. You know, I was on air for quite a while, and when we lost a house in 2018, I've been disgusted ever since. So I'm, you know, obviously the thing we need to do this November 3rd is to vote as a large a block as we possibly can. We don't seem to, you know, the progressive Democrats really stick together. You know, they use the same talking points. They support each other. They really stick together as a block. Even if they disagree, you wouldn't know it.
Oh, I know.
You know, but I think on our side, we've got to have that same kind of conviction and commitment to getting the progressivism out. Because that's really, you know, that's where it has to start. So
sure.
Hopefully...
Yeah,
hopefully the selection is coming up.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, repeat that.
Oh, I was saying, I don't even think we can, you know, as far as within our own group, as far as conservatives go, there's fighting amongst the ranks there, because you have some that call themselves conservatives, and those people, I don't know, I guess they're establishment conservatives, and you have the neoconservatives, and so, you know, there's too many factions within the conservative ranks, and that causes friction and makes it difficult, of course, to come together on anything. And I don't know. I'm worried, really worried, because of the disinformation that's out there. And with that disinformation, that it's affecting the president as well, and because his information may be limited as to what's put in front of him. And I don't know. I don't want to be a downer. I really don't. I mean, I plan on voting for President Trump, because I sure as heck am not going to go the other way. And I like to vote for whoever is qualified, and or at least that I think that will do a good job and is on track with what I want, which is, you know, limited government interference in my life.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you're more apt to get that from a Trump victory than we're going to get from whatever Biden has turned into. You know, I mean, they're coming with a heavy left wing. You know, it's right in line here with these with what I call the Marxist Islamist coalition, and they're mm-hmm. working very hard together to make it happen. But I just, you know, I kind of I try to always keep the faith. I really feel like Trump has a. If people come out and vote, not like what happened in 2018, you know, conservatives could have elected the mayor of New York. There was 25% turnout in New York. Could have elected the senator in Virginia. 25% turnout. If we just all turn out, we'll win.
I agree.
Just have to come out and win. And the first step has to be getting rid of the progressives. We have to get these radical progressive socialists out first. And then we can iron everything out later. But the never Trumpers are a problem. You know, he never gets the support from his own Congress, and it's his own Senate that, you know, that you would expect.
Yeah.
You know, they really have
amazing?
To be fighting for him. Oh, it's sad. It's really sad. You know, they talked all this crap for 10 years. Trump became president. He would have signed any bill they pushed through. And the first 2 years, they did nothing. Nothing.
And
they put some judges. They put some judges in. That was about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And
but I really
little, it seemed like there for a little bit that they had gotten some cojones. But then again, they never followed through. And that was a big disappointment. So, I don't know. I agree
Lindsey Graham.
We all need to turn out the vote.
God, we have to turn out to vote. It's the only way to have a chance to actually stabilize this and really fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
my husband has like multiple Facebook accounts because he keeps being put in Facebook jail for posting, you know, briefings from Fauci and the president and other stuff. And so they put him in Facebook jail. So he makes another account and starts posting again. So. If that's any encouragement to many out there who get put in Facebook jail or suspended from Twitter, you can open other accounts and keep posting and just keep the battle up. Don't relent.
Listen, I'm sure they'd like us all to run away. But I feel, you know, I get angry enough to say, well, I'm going to quit. That's it for Facebook and Twitter, you know. But, you know, they're still the dominant platforms. And you're mm-hmm. You're going to hit more people in those platforms than not. And that's why it's so critical. And that's why, this type of censorship is such a threat. But listen, Daily News, I appreciate the call. You come back now every time, anytime, okay?
Thank you very much, Feldman. Have a good evening.
Good luck in the future. Take care. Hope I see you on Wednesday. So that was right. Yes, we have to be concerned. There's definitely a concern out there. We've got to try to keep the faith. We have to keep our head down. We've got China pounding the drums. We've got, you know, New York City under assault from within with a corrupt mayor. The refugee crisis just goes on and on. It's getting worse and worse in Europe. It's sort of slowed down at the border. You know, if Trump loses this election, if the left gets in, it's going to be no borders. It's going to be no other parties. You know, and this type of censorship and this type of vilification of other parties was followed through by the Nazis. After they got elected, they made all others illegal except for their opinion. Hey, you've been listening to Feldman Rule Review. I'm Brian Irvin, your host here, and I want to thank you for tuning in. And remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, you've been listening to the August 2nd, 2020 episode of Feldman World Review. I'm Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review, thanking you for tuning into the podcast and listening. Remember, Sunday nights, 10 p.m., Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Feldman World Review. Let's get out and vote in November. Just plan on it. The block. We have to vote as a huge block. We've got to outvote the illegal aliens. We've got to outvote the cheating votes. We got to outvote the never Trumpers. We got to outvote them all. We got to show up. This can't be like 2018. We need everybody registered to the right. You know, everybody's not going to be perfect, but we got to vote these progressive socialists out. And remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.